thanks to our sponsor, Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 375, where today CJ and I are going to catch up on some news and some listener questions. Recorded live, Friday, September the 4th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. Back to the show. Well, those of you who submitted questions, you know it was supposed to be live September the 3rd, 2020, but we had a little bit of a mess up yesterday, so we were doing it today. We almost had a mess up again today, but we're recording today. We still have your questions. We're still going to go through them for those of you who submitted them on Twitter. But before we get to that, Mr. Johnson, how are you this morning?
I am fairly reasonable.
Fairly reasonable.
Fairly reasonable. Yeah, I'm actually pretty good. I know yesterday I screwed up and forgot to set an alarm and slept through our podcast recording time.
I was not going to out you, dude. I was going to let you.
I'm happy to out myself. It was a faux pas. And so, yeah, it got pushed until today. And then you've had your own set of issues. So, yeah, today is actually, it's still early-ish for me. So it's off to a good start. At least I've gotten up.
At least you've gotten up. So I got up. But I've been dealing with a dead car today, which looks like the main, my guess is, or my assumption is, the main computer is completely dead. So, yeah, nothing like watching your car getting dragged up onto a, literally dragged, like heels dug in. The rear wheels were completely locked. There's like tire marks on the parking lot. But I get dragged up onto a flatbed and take it to a service center to go get diagnosed on what's going on. So,
oh, gosh. That's brutal.
It was getting pulled up there and all I could do is taking the picture. I'm like, this is just like the guy walking the dog that's like dug in, but he's still dragging
with
the
his
dog.
Heels in.
He's like, I'm not going, God damn it. Sorry, I'm not going. So but anyway.
It's like trying to get my daughter to do anything when she's decided, no, she's not going to.
Those are fun.
Yep. How are you doing other than that anyway? Other than the car this morning.
Well, I'm going to set aside my horrible week with Windows and being kicked in the midsection by update 2004 that has killed a friend's sound card on her less than 2 week old Surface Pro 7. And me dealing with 4 hours trying to get a machine joined to another company's Intune until 4 hours into the tech support call, the guy goes, have you done this? Like, no, I didn't know you had to do that. I thought a Windows reset would do just fine. He goes, no, you have to completely rebuild it. I'm like, well, that would have saved 4 hours. Click.
Yeah.
But I am thrilled because it did happen this week that we announced, as I said on the podcast last week, we announced that we were sponsoring a NASCAR team for this weekend's race in Darlington. I guess by the time the show comes out, the race will have already happened. But yeah, it's been...
I'll have to post a photo to Twitter so people can see what you're talking about when it happens.
Yes, I will. If we get some good pictures from the race and I can post some pictures there...
When you say we, you mean Voitanos, right?
Yes, thank you.
Voitanos is sponsoring.
Yes.
Not the Cloud Show, just for the record.
Yeah, somebody asked if the podcast was doing it and I was like, I don't think our sponsors would be too thrilled with using their contributions and supporting the podcast for us to go sponsor a racing team. I don't want to get on the phone and explain, here's why we spent your money on sponsoring somebody else. Like,
yeah, fair. Okay, so it's Voitanos doing it. They race this weekend. The stickers are on the car, I guess.
Yep.
And yeah, hopefully get some good photos and some footage out of it.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be fun. It was neat to see the reaction to it. And I think I kind of mentioned this last week. There's two sides of this deal, of this arrangement. One is the side that you see publicly, the logo on the side of the car,
yeah,
and the press releases and stuff. And to be honest, I've gotten more than I thought I was going to get even just out of that for the last 48 hours. And seeing the result, like the bump in like social followers on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn for Voitanos, that was big. But the other side of it too, that I'm just not going to go into the details on, that I'm really curious to see how that turns out. So yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be really cool. But it has been a lot of fun. It was a lot of anxiety, like, oh, when's it going to go out? When's it going to go out? When's it going to go out? And then realizing, yeah, I misspelled the word partner. I forgot the N in it when the blog post that went out. So the link looks a little weird, but the title's been fixed. So at any rate.
One thing before we move on, Microsoft Ignite registration opened yesterday.
Ah, that's right.
Just throwing it out there, because this will be something you can do when the podcast comes out. It will still be valid when you hear this. Is although Ignite is going virtual this year, and it's really not Ignite as you know it, right? It's 2 days, September 22nd to the 24th, 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
You still need to register. So you can go to myignite.microsoft.com and go register, and that'll get you an account. And then when the session schedule opens up and all of that sort of stuff, be able to go build your schedule and do all those sorts of things and attend virtually. Doesn't cost anything.
Ignite's going to be interesting. I talked to somebody about like what they were doing, and it doesn't sound like they're trying to do the exact same thing they did at Build. It sounds like Microsoft is still going with that same approach that so many other virtual conferences are doing, which they're just trying to say, hey, let's just take the in-person event and let's try and make it a digital event, online event. And it's like, I have this mindset of just drop the shenanigans of trying to make it seem like you're in person. You're not. We all get it. We all know why. We're all in the same boat. So
yeah,
let's just embrace the fact that it's digital and virtual and online, and you're talking to every single time zone in the world at the same time. And so how can you embrace that and just forget about the fact that there's some live to it, but don't try and act like it's all live?
Yeah. So I think the one thing they've learned from, I think, Build, is it looks like there are, although it's 3 days, it's not really 3 days because it finishes at 8 a.m. on the third day. But it's 8 a.m. Pacific time, I imagine, on the third day. And I think the reason for that is, right, is because they've got, it's a rolling 2 days for the whole world.
Yeah.
So some of it is live, I think, and then others are recorded and replayed.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little different, but at least it means that people don't have to get up in the middle of the night to watch an Ignite keynote.
Yeah.
You know how...
Poor Australians.
Yeah. And if you weren't attending, you had to do that, right? So at least this year, it looks a little better from that perspective.
Yeah. So we'll see. I will register. I will try and tune in and we'll see what's there. And my understanding is that all the announcements are going to be in like the keynotes and everything else is just like a bunch of pre-recorded stuff. But
gotcha.
The keynotes and the live stuff is where you're going to see the announcements for new stuff.
Yeah. Well, I assume we will get the Book of News at some point soon and we'll see what's interesting and coming up for Ignite and we'll discuss that then.
Absolutely. This episode is sponsored by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and Regional Director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word. Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. And now back to the show. Okay, CJ, I had this idea right before our show, well, this show that we're going to do yesterday. And, you know, you and I have been trying to get listeners to get more engaged with the show and to send us a question. But we've been doing it as we've been recording and then leaving it, say, hey, send us a question. And people are going to have to tune in for their question later. And I thought, let's just go out on social media and let's see what happens. So
sure.
About 10 minutes before our scheduled recording time, when I think you were still asleep.
Yes, definitely.
I put something on Twitter and I was like going, hey, I'm sitting down with CJ in about 10 minutes. Got a question for us. And so we got a couple questions in. Not going to do all of them. Some of them aren't really appropriate to the show. Or not that they're inappropriate. I don't mean that. Like that one that asked about your inseam size. But I think that what we're going to do is I want to focus on like some of the questions that are cloud show appropriate.
Related?
Yeah, cloud show related. And
sure.
How about this time around, I do rapid fire on you, and then a time in the future, you ask the question, you do rapid fire on me from the questions that come in.
Sounds good. I don't know what's coming up.
That's good. That's even better. So we're going to time box this just about 10-ish minutes because we do have some news that we want to get into. We haven't done news in a little while. So we'll do some news once we get to that.
Sounds good.
Okay. So in one or two sentences, I got a question here from Dan Usher. The first one that got submitted is, what will be after cloud computing?
That's it?
There's two other questions, but they're not really related to the podcast. So I was going to let you.
No, but you, okay.
Yeah. What would be next after? What would be after cloud computing?
What happens after cloud computing? Well, okay. So I guess I'd start by saying cloud computing is just your server in someone else's data center, right?
There you go. Yeah.
So it's the same stuff just happening somewhere else. So that leads me to think beyond cloud computing, it'll just be the same stuff, but somewhere else again. And so maybe we will go from, my thoughts on this will be, we'll go from having computers in everybody's offices and houses, right? We've gone from that. We've moved to all your computers are in one place in a data center somewhere or in a series of data centers. And I reckon we might end up going weirdly back to what we had, except in a more distributed way. So think about like all of our cars have computers in them these days, right? Our phones have computers. Yeah, we've got tablets, which are computers and all that. Why not have all of those just magically all participating in some big cloudy mesh type thing and have just some uber distributed computing and you don't need big data centers in one place?
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
It's a little far out there, I think, but there's a lot of wasted computing today on people's phones and houses and cars and things like that, that I think, and laptops, right? Just like computers, like it's sitting there doing nothing 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It could all be used.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that. I mean, it makes sense. You're right. I mean, there's a lot of unused stuff. I mean, the power of my phone is not the power of my iPad. The power of my laptop is not maxed out when I'm doing, you know, when I'm not watching a movie or I'm not playing a game. So why not be able to take advantage? Like that whole SETI like program that we had.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was for number crunching, right? But why not be able to put a process in the cloud and really it just runs everywhere?
That's good.
And it gets taken care of.
All right. Here's another one for you.
Okay.
This is from Kevin McDonald. So what are you most worried about being announced at Ignite?
Oh, most worried.
So you can't say year of Yammer because that's already happened, I think. They said it did, but it didn't feel like it, but okay.
That's like the year of Linux, man. Like Linux on the desktop is coming every year. What am I most worried about?
Now it's time for virtual reality. No.
Okay, I know what I'm most worried about. Microsoft announcing the TikTok acquisition.
Ooh, that's good.
That's about the right time, right? So like,
yeah.
I think the theory was they have to have a deal by mid-September. At least this is Trump's timeline, right?
September 15th, I think.
Yeah. So he said there has to be a deal by mid-September. But who knows whether that will stick, right? So maybe later in September, there'll be some announcement about TikTok.
Mm.
I really don't want them to buy it.
Neither does Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And that's like what he said.
Was it really?
Yeah, he called it the poison pill or the poison something, the poison acquisition or the poison deal or something like that.
Gotcha. So at Microsoft years and years and years ago, there was this concern about getting into the telco business with Skype for Business and what was back then was Link and wanting to buy a telco, like a telephony company, to be able to provide all these inbound and outbound calling and all this advanced telephony functionality. And Microsoft didn't end up going ahead with it. Because they were worried about being regulated as a telco, right? Like AT&T or what have you here. And there was big concern about them buying Skype because of that being deemed a telco. And so long story short, how this relates to TikTok is I'm worried about them buying TikTok and then being branded with the social media provider badge and the wrath of regulation that may come around social media.
Yeah, I really like that one. I like your pick. I like my hopeful not pick. Ignite. As I feel the same way, I don't understand why they would buy it. It feels a little bit like the LinkedIn acquisition, which was let's buy it so that somebody else doesn't get it. But I just don't.
At least LinkedIn has been a net positive for them, right?
Well, and that's the thing is that I think that this, I can see you're wading into this and going, man, you're buying something that I don't know if you really want to get into this business.
I mean, I tweeted maybe Satya feels left out of the congressional hearings and he wants to go.
Hey, we want to get grilled too.
Yeah. Why aren't I being grilled for 8 hours by a bunch of people that don't know that iPhones aren't made by Google?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, TikTok, that would be my worst fear.
That's good.
For Ignite.
Yeah, Walmart may bail them out, it looks like, too. It looks like Walmart wants to get in a bidding war. Microsoft's like, oh, really? Hey, we won't up our bid if you want to take our bid.
If there's somebody dumb enough to come in and step in and take their place, they should take it.
Step right up.
Yes.
Okay, last question. This is from Microsoft's Vesa Juvenen. This has nothing to do with the cloud. And this was the last one because this can be a fun one. What do you think the future is of Williams F1? So for those who don't know.
Oh, savage.
Williams F1 was sold to a different team or to a different owner. And the reason it's called Williams is for the last name of the people who really have been behind the team. And they have been either, however you want to look at it. But there's no new leadership change. And Claire Williams and her dad are no longer involved in the team.
Correct. They're stepping away.
Yeah.
So yeah, Frank Williams is the team principal, and he's just, I mean, Williams is just such a historically significant team in Formula One. They've had a long history with world champions and amazing cars, but recent years has not been kind to them.
Yeah.
They will get a solid infusion of cash that they need, but it's not going to, my take on it is it's not going to lead anywhere. Nobody's going to invest like Mercedes and Red Bull, for example, are investing, mm-hmm. and probably Ferrari, although they're hitting hard times at the moment. So I don't expect them to go anywhere anytime soon. I just don't know if there's a spot in the sport anymore for like family-sized teams. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not enough money for them to provide it. So I'm really sad that they're probably going to change quite a bit. I'd love to see them do better. Obviously, I'd love to see all teams more equal. But yeah, I don't suspect it'll go anywhere.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It is. I mean, that is one of the things that's a turnoff.
It got bought by a PE firm, right? So like,
oh yeah,
not a venture capitalist, but like PE firms are notorious for buying things and then squeezing all the blood out of a stone.
Mm-hmm.
So like Williams has an amazing brand and name and historic car collection and all of that sort of stuff. And so who knows? It might be a fire sale and then sell the shell of a team to another company.
Yeah. Hope not, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. That was fun for some Q&A. We are going to try and do that for future shows as well. Don't leave me hanging. So next week, ballpark Thursday-ish morning, maybe Wednesday, CJ is on deck for being able to ask a question. So follow the podcast on Twitter. We'll retweet his tweet or follow the podcast on Facebook and CJ will post a question out there and we'll pull questions that are submitted from listeners. We'll pull them live. So you don't have to worry about listening to the show right now and I'll put it ahead of time. But hey, if you want to do that,
go ahead. Yeah.
Send us a question. Go right ahead. Send us a question. Send it to us on Facebook Messenger. Send it to the podcast on Facebook Messenger. Don't send it to one of our personal things. Send it to the podcast, please, so we can keep it straight. And then same deal with Twitter. And we will, because we'd love to get some interaction with our listeners. But with that.
Perfect. That's good.
Let's stay, keep everybody current. This podcast is brought to you by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. And we're back. All right, Mr. Johnson, I've found a few things that have come out in the news in the last week-ish or so. There's mostly a bunch of Azure stuff. News is starting to quiet down. You can tell because Ignite's coming. So a lot of Microsoft stuff is starting to get a little bit quieter.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that came out. I've seen a handful of things from the Azure space. I saw some stuff from the Microsoft 365 and other Microsoft space. So the two things that I'll quickly highlight here is one is that there's a big blog post update that we're going to have in the show notes about all the updates to Microsoft Teams that came out in August 2020. You've got things like mostly end user-ish kind of stuff. So like updates for meeting and calling people so that if you're doing a meeting, you can now have somebody spotlighted. And so whoever's speaking, they will be the big screen instead of looking at like the Brady Bunch view. You'll be able to have like, you know, be able to, it'll toggle and jump around for you. So that'll be nice. It's funny that the picture they chose, this lady looks so much like someone that you used to work with a lot, Sonia Koptev. To me, she looks very much like Sonia.
I'll have to look up. Hold on. Let me open the article. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's not her, but I mean, it's like.
No.
So that's.
I know what you're saying there. Yeah.
So that's one. Spotlight is one. There's some things about optimizations with Teams on VMware, new devices that are out there, like cameras and speakers and stuff like that. As well with chat, there's some better stuff around presence, the ability to manage Visio files in Microsoft Teams. I haven't seen a Visio file in forever. And on the developer platform side, for all you devs that are out there like CJ and I, there have been some updates around submitting apps to the Teams App Store through Microsoft Graph. There have been some updates to Microsoft Graph that show you or that allow you to end up doing that stuff. Also things about Graph resource-specific consent. So whereas before, consent was always granted to like an entire team or an entire channel, whereas now you can have it be more resource-specific. And allows you to have a lot more granularity to it. So that's a nice feature as well. Some Power Automate stuff, triggers for Teams, actions for Microsoft Teams. There's some updates around Teams for Education, Teams for the US government. So there's a lot of stuff there. I have a link to the blog post that explains all that stuff. And then the other update that I wanted to highlight is that around GitHub. And so GitHub had an announcement this past week, a pretty cool announcement where recently you may have seen that GitHub, I guess not recently, but within the last couple of months, they started supporting packages. So if you wanted to do a private package registry, like for you want to build like an NPM package or a NuGet package or something, and you wanted to have that available to your organization, in the past, you could use like NPM or NuGet, but you had to pay for like the private hosting for it.
Yeah.
And it was in those third-party registries. If you really wanted to lock it down though, and only want it available to your organization, like Azure DevOps gave you the ability to do it, but I think the writing is pretty much on the wall that Azure DevOps has got, maybe it's not, it hasn't gotten the Internet Explorer 11 death row mandate on it.
Yeah.
But I think it very well may be kind of one of those like going, yeah, this just isn't, you don't want to use this.
Let's put it this way. There hasn't been much news about it. And there's been a lot of news about GitHub.
Yeah. And if you watch the players, the people who've been involved with Azure DevOps, you're seeing a lot more of them doing GitHub stuff. Mm-hmm. So it just everything about it, there's a lot of smoke that basically says...
There's a fire.
Yeah, there's not... This is not an announcement. And this is not me like kind of peeking behind the curtain. But it sure looks to me like Microsoft is saying, Azure DevOps, we're not going to focus on that anymore. If you want Azure DevOps-y kind of stuff, go to GitHub Enterprise. We're going to make GitHub and GitHub Enterprise be our single like CICD monitoring, all that kind of stuff.
It makes no sense to manage to have two things that do the same thing.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
I mean, that's a very simplistic view of it, but at the end of the day, they've got two things that do a very similar thing. So it makes sense that they would rationalize that over time.
Yep. So what this announcement is, in addition to packages, they've taken that one step further and they now have the ability to do, they have their own GitHub container registry.
Mm.
So you've got the Docker container registry. You've got other ones that are out there as well. You've got Azure has a container registry and now you have a GitHub container registry. Now, why would you use the GitHub container registry over like the Azure container registry? I'm not entirely sure why you'd pick one over the other one. There are GitHub actions that are set up for building your containers and storing them in the GitHub registry. It's kind of like an extension on packages. It's in public preview right now. I don't know if it's a, is it really a replacement for Azure Container Registry? Or is it just one of those like going, you can use this ballpoint pen or this ballpoint pen, but they're both right. It's just which one you feel you like more. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Docker Hub as well and things, but
yeah,
you know, if GitHub is a place that they want to attract open source developers to or keep attracting them to it, having stuff like this really does help, right? Because you're building your software, often they'll distribute it in containers. And so you want to be able to push it to a container registry. And right now you have to go get Docker Hub account and go push it to Docker Hub.
Mm.
Whereas if it's all in the one place, I'm sure they could make the sort of the experience quite nice. And so, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. But I wonder if it's the bit that really interests me is like, is this backed by ACR, by Azure Container Registry? Or is it something totally new? I don't know that part.
Yeah, I've wondered the same thing because I can see an argument where it would be. I can see like the stuff with, what do you call it, with like some of the repos and some of the stuff with packages. Are those backed by the stuff that we have with Azure DevOps?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, so it's nice to have the options. And I'd say the other thing that's nice too, GitHub's roadmap is fully public and they've got like a GitHub repo with projects set up and the Kanban boards and everything on what's dropping in this month, what's planned, what's in the future, what's like in the backlog.
Yeah.
So you can really see where they're going with this. And it's pretty cool. I mean, they're making some pretty cool improvements on the CI and CD stuff as well that you can take advantage of.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's my two non-Azure-y kind of things here. Do you have anything for us? I got a few more Azure ones, but.
Yeah, sure. So Cosmos DB has a serverless version now in preview. So basically the difference here is that instead of having to create a Cosmos DB, be charged for it sort of on a monthly basis and all that sort of stuff, the serverless version is you can consume and use Cosmos DB, but with no minimum charge per month. And you just really use it purely based on consumption. And there's a few different modes, but yeah, this makes it easier to get started with, right? I think one of the big detractors from Cosmos in the past has been just the cost of entry. And this really removes that, unless, of course, you start doing lots of transactions, in which case you're going to be charged more. But, you know, that's the bet you take.
Yeah, but the thing I like about this is you don't have to make this big investment. You don't have to make this big investment up front just to be able to play with it and see, is this going to be good for my environment? Because if you use it and you only need, and you start really getting a lot of requests on it, then you might want like, you know, dedicated resources and stuff like that, not to spin up. Like when you use Azure Functions, right? I mean, you've got the ability to do like the cold boots or the warm boots, and you pay more for the reserved instances for them always on. But that's when you realize, okay, now I'm really using them. So now I really want to pay for them and make sure they're always available. And but you don't have to start with that. So.
Yeah. And I guess you can move from one to the other. So I wonder if you can move from the serverless model to the provisioned model.
Like an upsize?
If it makes sense. Yeah. If you get to a certain amount of throughput and you want to buy and commit to a certain amount of throughput. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
It would be.
Yeah. So serverless Cosmos DB.
We have two other things here. I know they'll interest some people. For those of you who are on AWS who have resources both in Azure and in Amazon Web Services, Microsoft has made a connector to the cost management and billing interface that they have in Azure.
Mm-hmm.
They have shipped, it was in preview and now it's GA, they've shipped an AWS connector so that now on a single pane of glass from back in the day when Microsoft used to use that term all the time, we have a way when you go into cost management, you can see your Azure spend and your AWS spend as well in one place. So you can manage those things. And some people may say, well, why am I going to have resources in each one of these different clouds? And a lot of different scenarios where that makes sense.
Yeah.
Maybe you're migrating from one to the other. Maybe you just do it for redundancy if you're a large organization.
Maybe you've acquired company with assets in a different place. Yep.
Yep. Maybe you've got resources for you're worried when there is a DNS issue, you want them in AWS instead. Because DNS, you know, come on, it's a low blow, but I mean, some people deserve it.
Fair call. Well played.
So that's one.
Yeah, I think there's lots of scenarios. That's interesting. Like, I think that's quite an interesting move in that you can imagine the next step is saying, here's when you can save money by moving to Azure. It also gives them a lot of insight into what people are doing in AWS.
Yep. You know, it's not like, I don't see much in AWS, maybe I'm wrong. I don't spend as much time in AWS, but I don't see much stuff that shows of being able to migrate things from Azure over to AWS. AWS kind of acts like, in the little bit I've spent with AWS and GCP, they act like the other two big public clouds don't exist. And Azure does mostly to an extent, but I'm seeing more of these AWS connectors. And it's kind of like, to me, you know they're there. So don't act like stuff isn't there. I mean, it's still, you've got a tiger in the room, you got an elephant in the room. You can act like they're not there, but they're there and we all see them. So just embrace it. I mean, I think the stuff is neat. I think it's cool to see them do this stuff to make them available.
Yeah, definitely.
Another thing they've done, which this will make lots of people very happy, is that they've added PowerShell support to durable functions in the Azure function space. This is in public preview. And so durable functions is just like a mode or a style of doing Azure functions, and they've added PowerShell support to it. So for those of you who love PowerShell and you want to do it in a serverless kind of environment without like using notebooks and stuff like that, automation, there you go.
Yeah, nice. Ooh, AKS, my favorite resource in Azure. They've launched a preview for resource health events for AKS. So the background behind this is when things go wrong in your AKS cluster, it's quite hard to figure out what it is. And often you have to report you have to raise a ticket and get Microsoft support to look into what's happening in your cluster. Could be things like problems in the overlay network system. It could be internal DNS resolution inside your cluster, stuff like that. We've had a few issues like that in the past. And so this is designed to give you insight into some of those sort of issues that happen inside your cluster, not with your application per se that's running on your cluster, but the health of your cluster itself. So that will certainly help diagnose some of these issues. Often we've been able to resolve them ourselves, but it's just hard without being able to tell what's going on because there's parts of it that are managed by Microsoft. So this will help sort of surface those in the portal and make it easier to, at least get past tier one support type of thing. So you have a few tools at your disposal to help. Yeah, and so that's in preview. It's not supported for production, and it doesn't look like it's available to Azure government customers or customers in Azure China yet, just in preview.
That makes sense. I mean, if it's in preview, it's limited on where you can actually use it. So
yeah, exactly.
I have another preview thing to share as well. One of them, or we've had the ability in Azure Storage to have a soft delete for blobs. Think of soft delete as like a recycle bin. So there's a retention period, you delete it, it goes into this like
holding pin type thing.
I think the recycle bin is just the best, like the SharePoint recycle bin is the best way to think of this because there's a timeline. It's not like the Windows recycle bin or the trash can on Mac where you have to empty it.
Yeah.
Like in real life. But in like SharePoint, it's in the recycle bin for a certain amount of time and then it gets automatically emptied. Well, then it goes into another recycle bin and then it gets dumped. But that's not what this is. So what they've announced now in preview is soft delete for containers. And so now if you delete a container, it goes into this special place with a specific retention policy. And during that retention period, you can restore previously deleted containers and any of the blobs inside those containers. So this is taking it just from the blob level all the way up to the container level. It's worth noting, this is not going all the way to the storage account level. If you blow away a storage account, that cannot be undone. That stuff is not recoverable. So it is only about like the current GA support is with blobs. The current preview that I'm talking about in this article that I'll link to in the show notes is a soft delete for containers. And then there's some guidance too on like,
yeah,
maybe you're looking for blobs, maybe you're looking for versioning for your blobs. That's not what this is. That's other capabilities that are available to you.
Gotcha. Also in the preview, it's only available in France, Canada East, and Canada Central if you're wanting to play around with this.
I found that to be interesting. Where it's available, those data centers are not usually the ones that you see that kind of stuff. Like France and Canada, I was like, isn't it usually like US West?
Maybe they had customers in those areas complaining, asking for this functionality. I don't know.
That's fair. Well,
yes.
That is all the news that we have this week, but that's not all we have for the show.
No. Let's get on to some picks.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. I'm feeling a little picky. You feeling picky?
I love picky, being picky.
All right. I have a pick, but it's not my pick. I have a listener pick that someone submitted to us.
Yay. We love listener picks.
I'm going to do my best. Let's make sure I get this right. Peter, let me know if I mispronounce your name, if it's not Sheshkin. Sheshkin? Peter Sheshkin?
Sheshkin.
I think I got that right.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm saying it as fast as I can so you can't tell if I mess it up. So, Peter heard us talk about the glider from the Gimli glider from a couple...
The Gimli glider, yeah.
A couple weeks ago, right? A couple episodes ago. He shared with us a Wikipedia link on the Alarosa Flight 512. It was a Tupolev Tu-154 passenger plane. That's generally seen as a Russian-made plane. And back in September of 2010, they lost all electrical on the flight. And this article is about how they were able to land, make a successful emergency landing on a remote landing strip after suffering an in-flight total electrical failure, and all 81 people, the 81 people that were on the plane were all unharmed.
Wow.
It was en route at cruise altitude when the failure occurred, which disabled the fuel system and all navigational and radio equipment, meaning that the aircraft would not have been able to reach its destination. They decided an emergency landing at a specific airport, the ISMA airport. The aircraft overran the end of the runway and came to rest among vegetation, damaged, but still on its landing gear.
Wow, that's incredible. Total electrical failure.
10,000 feet.
Brutal.
That is generally one of those things we call those as a whistler. Like your rear end puckers up so fast, you whistle.
It starts whistling. I bet they were puckering. That's got to be frightening. So, I mean, I'll read more about it, but I guess it wasn't a fly-by-wire jet. They must have had actual wires. And was it also hydraulics failure? Because then how would they, did they use flaps? Or, I mean, they got their landing gear down. I guess that doesn't necessarily require hydraulics, but you'd think mostly now articulating the surfaces of a jet.
Yeah.
You know, like it's ailerons and all that sort of stuff requires hydraulics. So I wonder if they lost all of that as well. Interesting.
I don't know.
I will read about it.
Yeah. So, Peter.
That's pretty cool.
Good pick, Peter. You definitely know.
Yeah.
I guess you definitely know your audience when you're sending a pick like that to me and CJ.
Yeah, for sure. That's a keeper.
Yeah.
Nice work.
How about you? What you got for us?
We will get his address details and send him out a key.
Absolutely.
Okay. This one, on the same theme of planes landing in weird places, I came across the very rare footage, as it turns out, of a U-2 spy plane landing on an aircraft carrier.
Oh, my God.
So there were, you know how, you know, landing on a carrier at the best of times is like part black magic, part stupidity, part luck.
Yeah.
And part talent, yeah. Right? You know, and that's with a jet that was built to do it. The U.S. tested, back in 1964, tested landing modified U-2s, the U-2G, which had additional equipment added, like a landing hook, for example, or I think that's what you call it, like a catch hook.
Arrestor hook.
Yeah, to grab the cables. And they tried and successfully landed on the USS Ranger back in 1964. So there's footage of it as well. But apparently it was about, it was the CIA basically saying, cool, let's go be able to photograph, get footage of different parts of the world. It'd be really helpful if we could do that off a carrier instead, because we'd be able to get much more coverage. And using a U-2 to go and do it off an aircraft carrier, pretty sweet.
I tell you, knowing this plane and knowing how capable this plane is, but also knowing how fragile it is, it's not fragile, but it's not made for something like this. I mean, it is like, when you see this, this thing is definitely made to be at high altitudes. It's not meant to land or take off, right?
No.
And so knowing that this thing can...
It looks real goofy doing either of those things.
Exactly. It does. And it's apparently like really hard to take off. The wings are so long. It's got those little wheelies that go with it to keep the wings from dragging on the ground.
It's kind of like watching a giraffe try to sit down.
That's true. That's good. That's good. It's like, I'm just thinking of this, like, I haven't watched this video. I'm curious to watch it. But unlike like a fighter jet that's trying to land on a carrier, if stuff isn't going right, they have the ability to be like, all right, abort, floor it. Let's get out of here.
Go around.
Right. Go around. Whereas with the U-2, I mean, this thing is almost like a glider. And so if you don't catch it on the first hook, is there an option to get out of there? Because
I don't know.
You've got to be going so slow with this thing to try and land it. And if you overshoot it.
It does have a massive amount of lift, though.
It does.
So it's possible that it doesn't really require much to get back up in the air. I'm not sure. Mm. But just, I mean, just for those listening, right? This thing looks dorky when it lands.
Yeah.
Like it's only got centerline wheels, right? So down the center of the aircraft. So when it stops, it tips over on its wings, right? And you're like, what? That can't be right. No, really. There's pods at the end of the wings that scrape along the ground. Mm-hmm. And when it's taking off, it's got these dangly wheels that are clipped, sort of hooked up underneath each end of the wing to keep the thing straight. And then as it starts hurtling off down the runway and its wings start lifting, those wheels drop off.
Yeah, it's like training wheels.
And what's even more amazing about this is when a U-2 normally lands at a regular airstrip, there's like some beefcake Camaro or whatever that's chasing it to tell it how far above the runway it is because they can't see very well. Yeah. And so it's like, how are you doing that on an aircraft carrier? They're not chasing it with a Camaro on a carrier, are they? So they've got to somehow, I don't know, I guess talk them in on the radio more clearly or something, or better instrumentation. But man, that must have taken utter balls of steel.
With the weight of the EU2 and the lift capabilities, I wonder if they almost can match the speed pretty close to the carrier and almost just like drop in.
Oh, yeah, it's possible, I guess.
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
They could, yeah. Maybe they were only able to do it in certain conditions, right?
Yeah.
Had to have a certain headwind to be able to do it and things.
Yeah.
Curious. Anyway, what do you got for us this week, AC?
I'm going to switch back to the development world. I read this article a couple of weeks ago, and I found this to be awesome. So I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to automation, DevOpsy kind of stuff. And this is an article from Amazon Web Services, from their knowledge base, their content. It's called the Amazon Builders Library. And this is automating safe hands-off deployments, software and delivery operations level 300. So here we go. It's getting deep. Now, this is a long article. But what's really neat about this is that so the lady that wrote it, can't pronounce her last name, but Claire Ligori, she talks about how when she first interviewed Amazon, and one of her first questions that she asked them was, how often do you deploy to production? And she was, in her life at the time, she was working on a product where they would do rollouts one or two times a year. And then when Amazon respond, they're like, multiple times a day. She's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And so she goes through the details of how they do deployments at Amazon and what their journey was to going through a continuous deployment. They go anywhere from, she talks about pipeline phases, source and build, test deployments, production deployments, using pipeline, having pipelines designed and written as code, and then some additional further reading for it. It's a long, long read. But it's for if you're a developer or you're doing any kind of DevOpsy kind of stuff, you can take a lot of inspiration from this in your project. I read this when I was right before I started doing this for the new Voitanos website, which isn't as simple as like a normal Hugo site. I actually have a bunch of scripts that are run first. So I have like three or four things that happen that build resources every single time the Hugo site is built that have to be there ahead of time. Mm. But I want things only to happen when everything is green going all the way through with a push out with some cleanup stuff on the end. And I took some of the concepts and used the spirit of things that what they do like in Amazon, and I applied this to my site. So I found it to be really, really interesting from a DevOpsy kind of point of view.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long article, but I'll definitely go read this.
Yeah.
Seems fascinating.
A lot of pictures too.
It's nice to get a view into how some of the stuff works at other places.
It is. GitHub is really good about doing this too. With the GitHub engineering blog.
Yeah.
And so are some of the other ones. Like Airbnb does a good job of this as well. But it's cool to see people share these kind of things that they're working on. And I mean, it's fine if like, you don't need to go into the details, but like, here's how we do a deployment. Here's how we roll it out to one thing. And if that works, we kind of move it to the next ones. And how do we go about doing that? We use kind of like a strangulation pattern and we can do it easier with containers and stuff. I think this stuff is so cool. And I don't think it really tips the advantage that one company has over another company. I don't think it tips their cards or their hand too much to where you're going to lose a competitive advantage because this is one of those things that it takes time to set this up and it really takes time for the organization to buy into it. So there's no like, oh, you did this. We're going to do the same thing and we'll have it rolled out in the next 2 weeks. Like, no. This is a culture thing. And so.
Yeah, for sure. Nice. Good pick.
Yeah. There's lots of links into it too for other stuff. If you want to see other like how they do stuff. Where she goes into things like there's another article that's like, how do you ensure rollback safely during deployments and stuff? It's like, it's a long article, but you'll find you're going to go back through different pieces and going, now I want to go read up on this. I want to read up on this. It's very much like a book. So
I'll go learn something.
There you go. CJ.
Good catching up. Sorry for the delay on the show.
It's all good. we recorded a show. They don't know. So it's all good.
Well, now they do. I fessed up to sleeping in. How about that?
I'm sorry for being your personal texting alarm clock yesterday.
Yeah, never mind. Well, no, I appreciate it. I'm sorry I missed it.
It's all good. We are good.
Hey, but today I set a proper alarm. There you go.
All good, man.
All right. Have a good one.
You, ma'am.
Catch you next week.
Take care. Did you like this episode? please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode, as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.